welcome to episode 3 of Flashpoint. It's been a couple of weeks since episode 2, and fortnightly's, you know, the intended time frame, so it's good to be back. And it's, as always, it's good to be back with Ed, who happens to sound a bit like a Wookiee with tuberculosis. How you going, Ed?
Don't ask. It's been one of those weeks. But the good news is the week is almost over and I get to do another podcast.
Exactly. What else could you ask for in life? So I think we shall start off with Republic News. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Republic News. So I think it's fair to say since PAX East a couple of weeks back, the news has been pretty thin on the ground. I wanted to start off with last week's announcement around the unveiling of Jedi armor progression. And it was sort of a nice little video showing the different aspects of progression through the Jedi Knight tune. And what's your take on it, Ed?
My take on it is, don't get me wrong, I love it. It's definitely Star Wars. Everything about it seems to be Star Wars. But, you know, maybe I'm weird, but I don't particularly like Jedi. I've never particularly liked Jedi. Maybe that's my experience in Star Wars Galaxies. I see it and I think, okay, yeah, it looks cool, but I'm never going to play it. Who knows? Maybe I will. Maybe I will eventually if the rest of the game rocks, but for the most part, I'm going to be rolling, you know, shooter type classes, not the, you know, run in and slice them up with a lightsaber type classes. But the actual armor, the stuff that they do, wow. The people who are doing this earn their money.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and I'm going to get all superficial here, I think it looks great. I like some of the abilities as you progress through. Yeah, look, there's not a lot to fault. I'm in your camp as far as I'm not likely to play a Jedi first up. It's not my obvious thing, and I think they'll be one of the most popular classes, so it'll be interesting to see just how that spreads across. But yeah, I think a good update overall.
Well, one of the things about Jedi is they are the iconic figure of the Star Wars universe. I mean, Luke Skywalker, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda, all of these characters were the iconic figures of the Star Wars universe. The Stormtroopers were anything but iconic in the first movie. I mean, they were cannon fodder. That's all they were. It wasn't until Attack of the Clones that troopers could actually shoot straight. There's a lot of thought, a lot of effort, and a lot of planning went into this to make the armor look functional, because I've worn real armor. And if it's not on right, it hurts like hell. Pardon my terminology, but that's what it feels like. It'll rub you in the wrong places. It'll scrape you in the wrong places. And then when you finally take it off and you look at yourself and you're like, I do enjoy doing it. It's just, yeah, I'm one of them. I'm one of the crazy guys who likes wearing armor and denting other people's armor. Haven't done it in a while, but I do enjoy doing it.
So what sort of armor are you wearing?
Well, when I did it, I was wearing a full set of chain, what the uninitiated might call chain mail, which is coif, hauberk, or haubergeon, depending on who you're talking to, leggings, and gloves. We weren't allowed to aim at the feet, although occasionally people did, and then they got, you're out. Ordinarily, you'd have a shield, and you have a wooden sword, usually a long tree branch. And I mean, it's like something out of, you know, where a kid puts his mom's pot on his head and picks up a garbage can lid, but a little more serious. People do get hurt. Nobody's been killed in the area that I know of, but there have been a number of fairly nasty injuries. You know, generally people making mistakes, or, you know, oops, I turned when I should have ducked, and the guy nailed me upside the head with the club. And even if you're wearing a helmet, it hurts like you wouldn't believe. It's lots of fun, don't get me wrong, but it hurts like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just, my main reason for asking that was I was wanting to confirm there was sort of medieval armor and not sort of just slathering yourself in Vaseline and wearing a nappy or, in your terms, a diaper. I just make sure.
Oh, David, I'm going to have that image in my head for the rest of the day. Oh, that's awful. I like it, don't get me wrong, but it's awful. Yeah. Oh.
But yeah, look, aside from the Jedi armor, it's just, it's damn quiet, and it's not surprising. You can obviously see that BioWare would have done a lot of prep work with what they unveiled at PAX East, so this is the expected lull after the storm. The only other news is obviously around the release date, which is, you know, after July. We know that much now, and as I mentioned last podcast, we've got plenty of traffic and interest in. There is still an enormous amount of interest in the release date. There are still literally hundreds and hundreds of people just clicking on the story on our site, let alone what Darth Vader would be getting, just because they're finding it on Google. There are hundreds and hundreds of people Googling every single day, and thousands, when's it coming out? And so, you know, best guess is we know it's after July. Beyond that, it's all guesswork. And, you know, the lack of, or the quietness over the last few weeks tends to lend a lot of weight to it going to be at least, you know, July, August, September.
I can't see them waiting until September, to tell you the truth. There are a lot of other games that are coming out. Most big game companies try to put their stuff out specific times. I don't know all the specific times. I do know that Christmas and, at least in the States, Christmas, Thanksgiving, which is November 24th, and or actually no, it's the third Thursday in Thanksgiving, or the third Thursday in November, which is not always on the 24th. And then there are a couple of other specific days in the year where they get marketing blitzes in. The Super Bowl is one of those. And did you see this stuff? What happened with Mass Effect 2 when they put a shot of that at the Super Bowl?
No, what happened?
They had so much business on the site that their site crashed. And the only other place I've ever seen that happen is with the Tor website. Specifically, after the two trailers came out, when Deceived came out, they had something like 25,000 hits in 10 minutes. And it crashed the site. And then when Hope came out, they had something like 30,000 hits in 10 minutes. And that crashed the site. Yeah, they have specific times. And I know that there's another Call of Duty, another Medal of Honor. Oh, there's a couple of other games that are coming out in the fall. So they probably, admittedly, a shooter and an MMO is not the, they're not catering to the same market. But if somebody has a choice between buying a shooter or an MMO, what are they going to do? Are they going to ask their parents for more money to buy another game, or are they only going to pick one? And then which one?
Yeah, I think you're right, and I don't see the shooter as a competitor. But yeah, absolutely. There's only so much time to play games, and for people, particularly those that already wedded to an MMO or two, you know, they're not going to pick up endless other games. So no, I agree with you there. I have no doubt it'll sink in with, you know, the Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know, whatever the trading rushes are, because BioWare, one thing that's very certain, they are obsessed about the US market, understandably. Europe secondary, and everyone else, from what I can gather, can go jump. So, yeah, I think it'll be closer to September than July, but no one's going to be happier than me to be proved wrong.
Yeah, I think August or September, but that's a basic, you know, I don't know. I don't have enough information to make a informed choice, so that's just my best guess.
That's pretty much it for the news. I mean, if I've missed something, I'm happy for you to beat us over the head on the forums or the website. But and as you know, by the time this just comes out, because we're recording this on a Friday night Australian time, so Fan Friday or the Friday update tends to come out pretty soon, so they'll probably guarantee some major announcement by the time we've finished editing this. That's just how it rolls. So there's actually four things I wanted to cover on Chewing the Fat this episode. First one, and two of them come from suggestions from our forums, and both really good suggestions. The first one was from the ever-reliable Axe on the forums, talking about doing a better version of guild recruitment. So we're all aware of the new guild hosting options on the Tor website. It's been very well received. There are thousands of guilds signed up. I've already criticised the fact you can't list a guild under Oceanic, which, you know, is a worry even just from a server hosting viewpoint. But one of the other suggestions is actually being able to do guild recruitment by the type of play guilds are looking to do. So whether it's PvE, PvP or role-playing, I quite like that idea, and I'd be pretty surprised if it's something that's not implemented, if not prior to the launch, pretty soon afterwards.
That was always something that bothered me when I played WoW and all the other MMOs that I've played, which admittedly I haven't played nearly as many as some people I know. You never really know what kind of a guild you're getting into. They may say something on their guild information bar, but then it may be complete, you know, bumalarchy. I remember my first guild. You know, the first guild that I got in, I thought it was PvP. I thought it was PvE, and it turned out to be PvP. And they're saying, you know, why are you playing this character? You can't PvP in that character. And it's like, I don't want a PvP. Then what are you doing in this guild? Okay, bye. It's pretty much what happened. After that, I looked fairly closely and talked with people in the guild before I joined them, but it did leave a sour taste in my mouth. This seems like it's much better set up.
So, but there's no option to... There's still no listing, as far as I'm aware, of being able to choose, or the guild may mention it in their description, but there's no easy way of recruiting people based on those play forms.
I'm looking at the guild page now. Yeah, all it has at the moment is, you know, Republic Empire, PvP, PvE, or RP. And that doesn't necessarily mean the guild will remain doing that, because after all, it's made by real people, and their real people are fickle, I think is the term that my sensei used, my first martial arts teacher. Real people are fickle. If you wanted to do that, I could see there might be issues, however. Is you say you're PvE, and then you have people who go out and gank other people. There'd have to be some way of enforcing it. I mean, obviously, you could get the guild leader to boot them out of the guild, but that seems a little extreme in most cases. You know, if you're Republic or Empire, you don't really have a choice. You kind of have to stay with those factions. For the others, I don't see any huge issues with this, but there are a lot of guilds now. Wow, there are 13,357 guilds in the Republic Allegiance.
Which, yeah, that, I mean, that's incredible. And even if you look at, say, half of them don't ever eventuate on launch, and then, you know, another couple of thousand sort of fade out or merge with other guilds, that's still, yeah, that's a huge guild count.
Yeah, and there's 15,000 in the Imperial. So, yeah, that's 30,000 guilds. If half of those survive the first couple of, you know, days after launch, that's still 15,000 guilds. Holy mackerel.
So what was the breakdown between Republic and Imperial?
Republic had just under 14,000, and Imperial had just under 16,000.
Okay, so there's a little bit of an imbalance there, which you'd expect. I'm actually surprised though. I thought initially the skew would be towards the Republic.
Well, not everybody likes playing a good guy. And not all of these guilds, I mean, it looks like a lot of these guilds have one person in them so far.
Yeah.
Some of them, like you say, many of them will disappear on launch, but some of them will continue. Holy mackerel, that's a lot of guilds. And not all of them have just one person. Some of these are huge.
So what we'll try and do for next episode, and I'd love to hear from any listeners, if what you believe the funniest guild name you've seen on the list is so far, and if it's not there suggesting a funny guild name. I'm still very torn. I definitely don't want to be forming my own guild. I've been in enough guilds to know what an enormous task it is, and there are plenty of oceanic guilds already underway. So, but yeah, I'd love to hear about what people are thinking about guilds, funny names, the whole thing, because I think it's going to be a focus of the discussion for the next couple of months until we've actually got the real game to play.
I just found one called a Galaxy Jar Jar Away.
See, that's good. I like that.
I don't know about that. You know, emulating Jar Jar, not a huge deal, but ugh. As long as they don't have the knights who say knee, I suppose we're fine.
Exactly. Well, you remind me of a good point, though. As far as the guilds, particularly on the role-playing servers, it's going to be interesting what guild names they allow. Because, for example, mentioning Jar Jar on a role-playing server is going to clash really badly for those that are dedicated to, you know, keeping in the right timeline.
Well, I'm sure there's somebody named Jar Jar on Naboo at this time period, but yeah, I see your point. It's still pretty cool. There's a lot of names on here.
So speaking of Jar Jar, who was, I'd argue, nothing better than a B-grade companion in those movies, the other suggestion from the forum from Milza, and thanks Milza, is around the issue of companion outfitting, which I admit I don't know a lot about, and I believe it's sort of a throw-off from Dragon Age 2. Ed, you're a bit of a Dragon Age 2 junkie. What's the go of companion outfitting?
Junkie? I resent that, sir. I'm not a junkie. I'm a fanatic. There's a difference. I've played Dragon Age 2 so many times and so many ways. I finally had to say, okay, enough. You know, enough. Stepped away from it and playing other things now for a little while anyway. Basically, what you do in Dragon Age 2 is you can recruit various companions. And unlike the previous Dragon Age game, where if you ticked off your companion enough, they either attacked you or left, in this one, they'll still stay with you, but they won't like you, and all the dialogues will change. But one of the cool things that you can do in Dragon Age 2 is, well, in Dragon Age 1, you can outfit your characters with different armor, with different weapons, with different, you know, whatever. In Dragon Age 2, you can still give most of your characters new weapons. There's a couple that don't want anything to do with some of these newfangled gizmos. There's one dwarf with a crossbow who's actually quite scary when he gets going, but the thing that you can do with your companions is you can't change their armor, you can't change the appearance of their armor, but you can upgrade their armor. You can find various things in the game world. Some of them are on bosses. Some of them you have to buy from merchants. Some of them you find in the course of quests. If of course you go into each little corner and find the things. And then these give your companions upgrades, you know, extra armor, protection against fire, which is really useful when you're facing a dragon, let me tell you, or more rune slots in their armor. The rune slots are a cool idea that you can add different types of things to the person's armor. You can add, you know, spirit resistance. The spirit damage is really, really bad news because it ignores armor and it ignores most damage resistance, so it just hits you. It hits your guy rather than your armor. Unless, of course, your armor has spirit resistance on it, which is really nice. You can also put runes on weapons, but until you upgrade your companions' armors, you can't put any runes on their stuff, generally. Some of their weapons, yes. Their armor, generally, no. I may be wrong. You may be able to put one rune on, but one rune is... It helps at the lower levels, but on the upper levels, you need all the help you can get. When you're facing a high dragon, you need all the help you can get.
Yeah, so, I mean, that all makes sense. And obviously, with Star Wars The Old Republic, there are going to be companions as such. Although my vibe is they're more about sending out to do diplomatic quests and gathering stuff. But I can see, if you're going to have companions, the ability to upgrade what they do and make sense. It just, that's the only way to put it.
Well, yeah, you don't want a companion that you had at level 1 with the same gear that when you're at level 30. Because, takes a shot and dies. I mean, what good is he? Yeah.
And for me, aside from the power that they have, I just want a companion that, again, getting superficial, but from an aesthetic viewpoint, they change. And obviously, as you get new gear, they do change. But I'm obsessed about dance animations, and I remain obsessed about dance animations. I want to be able to ask my companion to do, at level 1, the Macarena, and at level 40, the Funky Chicken. It'd be just stuff like that. That's what sells me on a game.
Just don't do the locomotion, please.
No.
Please don't do the locomotion.
No, I agree with you there. I think the end level content for a dance animation would either be the Time Warp or the Lambada.
Lambada. Okay, yeah, I can see that.
So, that's my inspirational idea for the Fortnite BioWare, and I won't even charge you for it. So moving on from, thanks again, Mills. It's a really interesting point, and I think it's one we'll be coming back to. The other one I wanted to talk about is the big MMO release of the last couple of months now is Rift. Now, I'm not sure, I'm assuming you haven't played it, Ed. I know I haven't. It's getting some pretty good vibes and feedback from people. People are enjoying playing it. It's different enough from a lot of the other MMOs that it's getting a dedicated audience. But so I decided today, look, I'm going to check Rift out. It's just good to be aware, and it's another contrast point for Star Wars The Old Republic, aside from just quoting World of Warcraft all the time. But of course, I logged in, and I can't download it because I am a Mac user. And it just reminded me again that one of the biggest challenges, well, it's not one of the biggest challenges, it is from my viewpoint, one of the challenges BioWare are going to face with Star Wars The Old Republic is the fact that they're not supporting the Mac. And I know they'll say, look, there's boot camp and their abilities to deal with that, but that's an absolute fob off. And on from browsing the official forums, most people aren't buying that either. Given that Mac users now may only, I think the last time I looked, was about 10 to 12% of the market, so they're far from a majority, but 10 to 12% of a market is significant. And I like Rift, they're missing out on many thousands of potential subscribers because I can't use it. Star Wars The Old Republic is facing the same issue. Now, for those wondering, because we do a podcast and I run a website on Star Wars The Old Republic, I am actually going to go out and, God forbid, buy a dedicated standalone PC just to run Star Wars The Old Republic. So that's fine because, I've got a dedication to it and I'm covering news with it, so I need to do that. But, for people that are balancing up MMO subscriptions and, they might be playing World of Warcraft and paying their few bucks per month and they're a Mac user, well, the decision's made for them. They're staying with World of Warcraft because it's just too an expensive decision to do otherwise. And, with 12 million, whatever it is, subscribers of WoW, 10% of that's 1.2 million. That's a figure that BioWare would happily have.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've always been a PC person myself. I've never used a Mac anywhere except school. And while they're different enough that you can't just jump into them, I mean, the keyboard is set up in a different way, so I can't just start typing on it.
How is the keyboard set up in a different way? I use a PC at my workplace and a Mac every night, and there's no keyboard differences. Oh, sorry, I apologize for that. No, you're right. Sorry, there is the difference between the control key and the function key on the Apple.
There's a control key. The control key, the function key, the backspace key, the number pad is right by the, you know, it's not difficult. It's just, you know, what was it? Travis Taylor called it fiddly bits. It's little fiddly bits that are, that build up. And then, you know, I'm trying to use the Mac like I would a PC, and of course it doesn't work. I try to get onto things on the Mac that don't work as they would on the PC, and of course that gets me a little frustrated. I like a lot of the things about the Mac. I like the fact that there have been very few Mac viruses. There have only been, I think somebody said there have been 20 documented Mac viruses, and there have been like 300,000 or so documented PC viruses. Because, well, for one reason, because the Mac is such a niche market. It's not. It was marketed to everybody, but they didn't do as good a job. Apple didn't do as good a job as Microsoft did. Now, we could love them or hate them, but they did a very good marketing ploy to get the PC out there to everybody.
Oh, absolutely.
I think the Apple is a better machine, all told. I think the Mac is a better machine for most things. I've never used it for gaming, so I would not have I cannot have an opinion.
Well, my view on the gaming thing is it's certainly no better. I mean, you can obviously spec any system to be great for gaming, and I certainly don't think the Mac's any better. And I know there are a whole bunch of people that have probably turned off this podcast just because I've got into the Mac versus PC argument. So I'm probably, and I'm thinking of you, Gail, one of our regular listeners. So that's not what I'm getting at about which one's better than the other, because, yeah, you can go on about that forever. It's more, I just think BioWare, as a larger company, had the resources to be able to make this a dual format version. And obviously there's a third viewpoint as far as Linux users peeve that they're not going to be supported as well. I think that's a slightly weaker argument, although Linux continues to grow. It's just, I don't know, I think it's going to have an impact and it'll get some coverage at the time that there'll be a whole bunch of people going, I'd love to play this and I can't, or I did try boot camp, and because I'm on, you know, a two-year-old Mac, it's going to run a lot slower than a two-year-old PC because it's an emulation setup. So as much as BioWare are going to support that as much as they can, I'm not convinced it's going to work.
True. What is your thought on PC versus console? Or should we even go into that here?
Yeah, well, that's probably another hour-long special episode, but my short answer is I think, if you've got the money, PCs are a better gaming product than consoles, which is not surprising given the hardware on the whole tends to be better. But then I love my console as much as the next person. So, yeah, it's horses for courses.
Yeah. Then I've used both PC and console, and I have to say I prefer using a PC because it's much more than just a gaming machine. I use it for writing. I use it for emailing, although you can use some of the more modern consoles for word processing these days, and you can send email from them. Oh, don't ask me why.
Yeah, absolutely, and browse the web and YouTube. That, I agree totally. Yeah, look, it's horses for courses. I think it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out over time. Majority of the market are PCs. They are cheaper, so people are more easily able to upgrade them. And I mean, that's the reason I can afford to buy a PC to run Star Wars The Old Republic, because for, you know, $700, I can get a machine that will hopefully run it once they confirm the specs. So, you know, I can't complain about that. But yeah, just an interesting little point. Again, would love to hear back from people on what they think on that issue without starting a Mac versus PC flame war, preferably.
Preferably, yes.
Although they can be fun. So I think that probably covers the news and debate for this week. It's a bit of a shorter one, although it's coming close to the 40-minute mark. So I've had some feedback. People are liking that sort of length episode. We'll definitely be back in a fortnight. And as always, if you want to contact us, the forums are toroz.com.au/forums. Obviously, that we've got a contact form via the website. We're on Twitter at SWTOROZ. would love to hear from you. And until a fortnight's time, we'll talk then.